You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated...
It is Monday, April 8th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Tim Sharrock, contributor to The Nation magazine, author of Spies for Hire, Secret World of Intelligence Outsourcing. On the NSA 4, how they were attacked by the Obama administration, dating back to rampant fraud and privatization during the Bush administration. Also on the program today, I am incredibly sick. And two, the grand sellout continues. At a time with the massive failure of 401ks, an already wobbly three-legged stool about to have another leg lopped off if the president has his way. States around the country now moving at the behest of ALEC to make illegal the factory farm videotaping and stings that have brought about federal prosecutions. Gitmo, an ongoing food strike, hunger strike, I should say, is ongoing at Gitmo. And the UN has now said it's a clear breach of international law. And apparently, we've heard many times that people who don't know anything about guns shouldn't be able to weigh in on gun laws. And the irony is that everybody, or I should say a vast majority, or a significant majority of people who weigh in on gun laws, even those who own and know guns, don't seem to know anything about the existing gun laws we have in this country. More data on that. So, folks, and the sequester continues to ripple across the country. A lot of, we spoke on Friday about the news that President Obama's budget is going to include the chain CPI and then also cuts, some benefit cuts to Medicare, as well as provider cuts. And there has been quite an uproar about it. We will talk about it more on this program. I have yet to find, has either one of you guys seen anybody write in favor of this? I mean, in other words, I've seen on some listservs I've been on, I've seen people defend it. And we know that Greg Sargent wrote on Friday that this is a Sophie's choice. Either liberals have to decide whether or not they want the sequester to continue, or do they want to cut Social Security and Medicare? And of course, this is a false choice. It doesn't necessarily have to be that. I mean, and the logic of that is a little bit is a little bit shaky. If we're to believe that this offer, I mean, you know, there's two ways of looking at this, and we're going to talk more about this after the interview with Tim Sherrick. But like I say, my energy level today is rather low. I'm a little sick, but there's two ways of looking at this. Either this is a I think it's undoubted. It's hard to argue at this point that this isn't simply what President Obama thinks he needs to do for his legacy. Do not confuse the notion that people can be saying this is a Sophie's choice here. Do not confuse that with the notion that the president didn't want us to get to a Sophie's choice situation. It is quite clear that we are at this juncture because the president wanted us to be at this juncture. You can make the argument that the president wanted to avoid the sequester altogether with a similar deal that he has outlined in his budget. That is accurate. He certainly offered it in the past. The fact that the sequester is ongoing, I think, is more about a function of the administration not being very good at understanding their opponent and what is driving them. But make no mistake, this is simply the fallback position. This is simply a different tactical position on a broader strategy that the Obama administration has had since 2009, which is to forge a grand bargain, including entitlement reform. There is no one who can argue against that, credibly. I haven't seen anybody argue against it. But just because the president has wanted to get us in this situation does not necessarily mean that the answer to the Sophie's choice is we choose neither. But that is the answer. Because if the sequester is so painful as to drive Republicans into this grand bargain, or alternatively, if the sequester is so painful that Republicans will pay a political price for not trying to find a way out of it, then the sequester is also painful enough for the Republicans to have to come to the table, regardless of whether or not entitlement reform is there. Because they don't want to embrace cuts to Social Security or Medicare. They just want the president to own it. So really what the president is offering is not simply something that they want. What they want is they want the political leverage that comes from that. So the president does not care about what happens in 2014, or he would have never made this deal. And or he's quite convinced that they can't take back the Congress. And I don't think he cares about the Senate. And to the extent that he does, I think he thinks that those senators who might be on the bubble are going to vote against this anyways, and it will pass anyways. I mean, those who are on the bubble are going to vote for it, and it will pass even with the progressives saying no. So understand where President Obama is coming here from here. And it's not a terrible surprise. But it is why the strategy must be to focus on the Senate and the House and to call your representatives and tell them you will welcome a primary challenge against them. You will fund a primary challenge against them if they vote for this budget, if they vote to cut Social Security or Medicare. They need to hear it. They need to be scared off here. As far as President Obama's legacy, his legacy is sealed in many respects, I think. It's debatable as to whether or not cutting Social Security and Medicare will help him in the short run in terms of the Beltway. But I think in the long run, he's going to go down, and I may be mistaken, but I believe he's the first Democratic president since FDR to to support a cut in Medicare or Social Security. The 83 commission that raises the retirement age of Social Security, I think happened under would definitely happen under Reagan. I don't know. I don't know if Jimmy Carter called for a cut in Social Security, or I can't imagine Johnson did. It would be interesting to know. I mean, that very well may be his legacy. And one of the other aspects of his legacy will certainly be his unprecedented attack on whistleblowers. This is an interview I did for Ring of Fire last week, but I think you'll enjoy it. Tim Sharrock wrote this piece for The Nation magazine. I would encourage you to read it. There's he sort of buries the lead in this piece to a certain extent, but there was a system in place prior to 9/11 that many people thought could have exposed the 9/11 attacks. It was replaced with an outsourced boondoggle. And part of, we spoke to this to Timothy Drake, Thomas Drake on this program a while back with Jesselyn Raddick. But this cronyism was exposed by four or five different NSA whistleblowers. And they were hounded through the Bush administration, through the Obama administration. They were never able to press legal charges against them. But their lives were destroyed. It's a fascinating story. And we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Tim Sharrock. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. Now that interview with Tim Sharrock from The Nation magazine, author of Spies for Hire, The Secret World of Intelligence Outsourcing. So, Tim, let's just to place this in context, your interviews with some whistleblowers who have been really, if not prosecuted, persecuted in many ways by this administration. Place into context for us the Obama administration in terms of its crackdown on whistleblowers and its use in particular of the Espionage Act.
Well, that act was passed in during World War I. It has only been used sporadically. It was used against Daniel Ellsberg in the 70s. But it's mostly been used against people like Alder James, who are actual traitors and actual spies who passed on secrets and sold secrets to enemy countries like the Soviet Union. In this case, under the Obama administration, has used the Espionage Act a record six times to go after people, not for being spies so much, but for allegedly leaking classified information. And mostly it's been used against people who have, you know, who have talked to reporters about information that the government considers classified, but is information basically about either government agencies or corporations breaking the law, or in this case, finding fraud, waste, and abuse at the National Security Agency.
And we should say that it's not simply that they spoke to reporters about classified information, because frankly, we see that almost on a daily basis, whether we, you know, in articles written in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, the entire drone program was a function of allowed leaks. I mean, these are specifically leaks that the administration didn't want to be leaked.
Exactly. And also, I must say that in this case, none of these four NSA whistleblowers released or were found to have released classified information. The only one of them who was actually charged was Thomas Drake, who had the highest security clearance of them and was the had the highest level job at the National Security Agency. He was prosecuted under the Espionage Act and several other federal counts. It was mostly had to do with his discussions with one reporter over a program called Thin Thread that I talked about in the article that had been developed in-house by NSA scientists. And he also had talked to that reporter about this corporate private program called Trailblazer that the whistleblowers believed had was basically they were conducted fraudulently, and there was a tremendous waste of money and abuse of power in that specific program.
So tell us about the four whistleblowers: Thomas Drake, William Binney, Jay Kirk Wybie, and Edward Loomis.
Well, Tom Drake had worked started out as a in the Air Force, you know, in these planes that fly around the world picking up signals, so he had been involved in signals intelligence as a soldier, and he went on to the CIA after that. This is like late 80s or early 1990s. He went to the NSA as a contractor, and he actually was there several times as a contractor until he was hired full-time in 2001, and he was there until 2008 at the NSA. The other three were basically, lifetime NSA employees who had started working there in the 1960s, and two of them, Ed Loomis and Bill Binney, had been involved in, you know, computer programs, software, engineering. And in the case of Bill Binney, you know, kind of mapping out how to track and intercept communications around the world. And Kirk Wybie was an analyst for various programs, analyzing signals intelligence. So between them, they had about 120 years maybe at the National Security Agency, and so they know from the inside how it works, and they know a tremendous amount about the technology it uses to intercept communications, telephone calls, and emails.
And the story for three of those whistleblowers, Loomis, Wybie, and Binney, goes back to 2002. Tell us, what did they do that began this process that ended with them really, in many respects, having their lives destroyed by the U.S. government?
Well, what happened was that they as the law asked people to do, if you find fraud, waste, and abuse within the government, they went and reported what they considered a tremendous amount of fraud involved in this project called Trailblazer, which was a privatized intelligence system that had been ordered up by the National Security Agency in 2000, they went and they wrote a letter and said, you should look into this, you should investigate this, and they made their charges known to the Defense Department. And Tom Drake, who was at a high level in NSA, actually joined their complaint. He was supposed to be anonymous, but he provided evidence for their case. And there was also one other person I mentioned in my article, Diane Rourke, who was a House staffer, a very high level in the House Intelligence Committee, and she knew all about these programs, and she also knew about the fraud and waste and abuse, and she had also joined this complaint. And actually, it's very important for listeners to know that the Pentagon Office of Inspector General took up this complaint, investigated, and in 2005 issued a report that at the time was classified, that essentially backed up all the complaints made by these whistleblowers. They did find fraud, they did find waste, they did find abuse, and then that report was eventually declassified in 2011. And the parts that you can actually read, and there's a link in my article to the report. You can see that, you know, how much they actually did back up the charges that these whistleblowers had made. And unfortunately, they reported this at right around the time that it was a little bit after they reported it. The New York Times broke the story about the secret warrantless surveillance program that had been started at the NSA right after 9/11. And the Bush administration at that time began to a massive search for whoever it was they thought, you know, had leaked this information to the New York Times. And so Drake and the others were caught up in this investigation into the leak, and their names were somehow passed to the to prosecutors at the Justice Department. But Drake eventually was the only one actually charged. The other ones lost their security clearances and lost their ability to ever work in intelligence again.
And so now, and were they? Did they have any involvement in the leaks regarding the illegal wiretapping?
They did not. They did not. That actually, you know, that wiretapping story, the leak, came from somebody in the Justice Department who later admitted to it. Actually, they had nothing to do with that leak whatsoever. And Tom Drake was charged because he had spoken and communicated with a reporter from the Baltimore Sun, but he did not pass any classified information on. He passed, you know, he gave her some unclassified information that was used in an article, and they took that as a sign that he was leaking classified information, which he was not.
Okay, so we've got to take a break, but we have now four or five members of the NSA who reported on massive amounts of fraud and abuse in the within a project that was to gather intelligence. Ostensibly, they are concerned both about the fraud and abuse and the effect that would have on their capacity at that time to do real intelligence work, which particularly in 2002, 2003, 2004, there was a and it continues, I would imagine, but a serious and a desperate need to gather intelligence. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the rest of the story. What has happened to them since this, and why? We got to take a break. We'll be right back after this. So, Tim, we've outlined the story of these NSA whistleblowers. And from all that you told us before the break, these were four or five individuals who simply reported in the way that we would want our government officials to do to the proper channels in reporting on fraud and waste. Their complaints were vindicated by the inspector general, which showed that their complaints were legitimate. So why is that not the end of the story? Why were these people prosecuted?
You know, that's really something that's very difficult to answer. I can't quite figure out what is up with the Obama administration on this, because the Bush administration, they're the ones who began the investigation into these individuals. And then when the Obama administration came in, the Justice Department decided to carry out that work and decided to indict Tom Drake. And it seems to be that there's tremendous pressure on the Justice Department and the White House to stop leaks at all costs. They've taken, you know, very extreme steps to do this. To me, it's not clear, and it does not jibe at all with what President Obama promised in terms of openness and transparency in government. It really hits a mystery to me and something I can't answer. I think that's something only the Obama administration and perhaps Attorney General Eric Holder can answer, why they went after these people.
Well, and I mean, how is it if the Pentagon's Office of Inspector General basically said that their whistleblowing on this fraud and abuse was legitimate? I mean, what are we seeing? And there was no evidence that they were passing on information that in any way damaged intelligence gathering operations of the United States. And maybe I'm asking you to speculate beyond where you want to speculate, but do you have indication in talking to these individuals that this was retribution, not so much for endangering U.S. security interests, but rather for reporting on waste and abuse within a bureaucracy?
Well, the key point of these programs was this. Inside the NSA, Ed Loomis and Bill Binney had developed a program called Thin Thread that was designed to intercept communications coming in by the internet into the United States at very, very rapid speeds. You know how fast the stuff moves on on fiber optic systems. It's an incredible amount of information that and data that goes through these lines. And they were able to develop a system that could they could actually do the analysis at the point of interception. Analysis meaning, you know, put in numbers and, you know, say a number of a known terrorist in Afghanistan, and then they could find calls to and from that particular individual. And then Bill Binney had designed a system where you could graph out relationships between callers and show analysts that there are relationships between, you know, caller A, caller B, caller C that could be seen as some kind of network and might be able to use to predict what might happen in the future or what they were planning if you could actually start actually listening to the actual calls by these people. So they had designed a system like that that actually worked, as I describe in the story. They tested this system. And at very high level, you know, NSA listening posts. And then in August 2001, they were told the system would not be deployed. And in fact, what had happened was NSA had gone for a system that they said would do all that, but much more, that they contracted out to a company called SAIC and several other large defense contractors such as Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman. And that system was built, billions of dollars were poured into it, as opposed to only $3 million in this ThinThread case. This Trailblazer project went on for years. They never produced an iota of intelligence, and it was finally canceled in 2006. And what they say, what the whistleblowers told me and what I quote them as saying, if their system had been in place in the weeks leading up to 9/11, they believe they would have been able to track some of the relationships between Al-Qaeda operatives that could have tipped off U.S. intelligence. They basically say NSA intelligence stopped in its tracks when they canceled their program. And that's what really infuriated them. That was one point. They also were very upset after 9/11 by the fact that, you know, technology that they had, pieces of their program, the ThinThread program that they had, this such as the graphing software that they had built, pieces of their program, which they had designed for foreign intelligence. You know, got to keep this in mind. NSA is supposed to be spying on, right, you know, foreign countries, people in foreign countries, foreigners, not Americans. They use this to track conversations and discuss, you know, emails and communications among Americans. In other words, they turned a system designed for foreign intelligence onto the American people. And this really disturbed them, and that's why Bill Binney, Kurt Wiebe, and Ed Loomis left shortly after 9/11. They left the agency because they didn't like seeing, you know, the agency turn into an organization that would spy on Americans, against that went against the grain of everything they had ever learned while working at NSA. And so that's part of it. And so they say basically this Trailblazer program, you know, failed American people and failed to actually provide any intelligence. And that's what I believe is being covered up. That's what I believe they went after these people in retribution. It was tremendously embarrassing to the NSA. It was tremendously embarrassing to the Bush administration and the U.S. government that they went for a corporate privatized program that never worked.
And now we have the Obama administration at least carrying on that that process of essentially breaking these individuals financially and socially, and leaving them really in dire straits. And presumably, I guess, to make sure that to the extent that they tell their story, it is at least somewhat disregarded. But I appreciate the work you've done in uncovering it, Tim, and I appreciate your time talking about it today.
Thank you so much.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. That was Tim Sherrick, The Nation magazine, and author of Spies for Hire, The Secret World of Intelligence Outsourcing. Folks, we're going to head into the the member show, as we're going to have a short show today. As you can tell, I'm rather ill. Hopefully we'll be back with a full show tomorrow. Maybe it'll be a Matt and Mike show. On Wednesday of this week, we'll be talking to the author of Austerity, Mark Blythe, economist from Brown University. You can become a member of this program by signing up at majority.fm. Oh, I guess I should mention on the free show that Margaret Thatcher died. So she's dead. I'm not terribly impressed with her legacy, frankly. The best tweet I saw was on Twitter was not necessarily in reference to Margaret Thatcher, although one suspects it might have been something to the effect of, regardless of what you say about the Luftwaffe, they totally changed Great Britain, or something to that effect. So we may talk a little bit about Margaret Thatcher in the better half of the program, which we will enter into forthwith. Again, you can become a member of this program at majority.fm. You can support this program by buying stuff through our Amazon link, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. All the info at majority.fm. If you want to call into this program, 646-257-3920. There's nothing that makes me feel better than talking to a libertarian when I'm sick. 646-257-3920. Or you can IM us at Majority FM. We'll talk a little bit of the grand sellout. And I'll tell you the story about the the videotaping of the factory farms and more. See you in a minute.